This is going to be a different sort of homily for me today. I'm just going to re-present the gospel to you, to draw your attention to various things as I do. If you've ever been on any type of a tour where there's a tour guide, maybe through a geographical location or a museum, or even when you're buying a home or a car, you probably have had someone show you around, point out different locations or features or points of interest. And that's kind of what I'd like to do with our gospel today. I just want to walk through it again with you and take a closer look at some of the sights that we see along the way. Today's gospel says that Jesus went to pray and he took with him Peter, John, and James. In just a few weeks, we will be reminded that after the Last Supper too, Jesus went to pray. And on that occasion also, he took with him Peter, John, and James. The location Jesus chose to go and pray in today's gospel is up the mountain. Interesting to note that Christian tradition has described the location of Jesus' crucifixion also as having taken place on a mountain or a hill. You may have noticed in the gospel today that we're told that Peter and his companions had been overcome by sleep. Before Jesus was arrested in the Garden of Gethsemane, these same three apostles had the exact same problem. They could not stay awake there either. Today we're told that while he was praying, Jesus' face changed in appearance. We're given to understand that he was glorious to see, beautiful, shining, bright with glory. He hardly looked human at all. Compare this with what happened to him in the Garden of Gethsemane before he was arrested. His face changed in appearance there, too. It did not become glorious, but sorrowful. He began to sweat profusely, and the sweat was in the form of drops of blood. And in his passion, we recall that he was beaten severely. Isaiah says that he was so brutally beaten, he hardly looked human at all. We read today that Jesus' clothing became dazzling white, clearly displaying his glory and honor. In his passion, however, his clothing was taken away from him. He was humiliated and shamed, stripped naked, denying him not only any appearance of glory and honor, but even of basic human dignity. Today's gospel tells us that two men were there with him, Moses and Elijah, also appearing in glorious form. Note the crucifixion. Two men were with him there. One on his right, the other on his left, sharing his suffering and his humiliation. In today's gospel, these two men, Moses and Elijah, were conversing with Jesus. They were speaking to him about the way he would gain victory over sin and bring glory to all people. Those two men being crucified with him also conversed with Jesus, mocking him, taunting him. In the Transfiguration, Peter spoke boldly and enthusiastically, "Master, it is good that we are here." At his crucifixion, Peter was nowhere to be found. He had abandoned him. He wanted no part of this activity. At the Transfiguration, the voice of God could be heard saying, "This is my chosen son, listen to him." In the crucifixion, there was no voice from the Father. In fact, instead of the Father calling out on behalf of his son, we hear the son cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" In the Transfiguration, our gospel says, after these words of the Father were spoken, Jesus was alone, and they all fell silent. In the crucifixion, Jesus speaks his last words, commending his spirit to the Father, and he himself falls silent and then is later alone in the tomb. And that's where this tour stops today. But as you know, that is not where the story ends, either in the Transfiguration or at the crucifixion. So what's my point in this homily? I really don't have one. I'm not going to sum up all of these comparisons with a grand conclusion tying everything together in a statement that brings you to a new level of revelation. That's not my goal. It's not my job. In fact, I hope to do just the opposite. I hope to leave you a little uncomfortable, a little unfulfilled by what I have said. I hope to leave you with a desire to discover more about how the transfiguration and the passion are tied together. I hope to leave you asking more questions than I answered, questions that I hope you'll talk about as a family or with a group of friends over coffee sometime. Questions like, why did Jesus choose to show himself transfigured in glory to Peter, James, and John? Why? Why is it written in Scripture so that we may know about it? What's it all supposed to mean to us? Why were only Peter, James, and John invited to experience it? Why not the other apostles? I mentioned that these three were also with him in the Garden of Gethsemane, but they were also exclusively allowed to accompany Jesus in one other gospel story. Do you know what that other one was? What do the three events have in common? Research that. Why did Moses and Elijah appear to Jesus in the story? Why not Noah and Abraham? Why not Adam and Isaiah? Why not David? Maybe St. Joseph? Why was it important to know that Peter wanted to build tents at the Transfiguration site? Why is it important that we know that God interrupted Peter while he was speaking? What did this cloud that overshadowed them look like? Remember that nothing written in Scripture is frivolous or unimportant. Everything written is done for a purpose. So what is the purpose of some of these details? Ask those questions of God. Talk about these things together. Spend some time praying with the Scriptures, not just today's Gospel, any Scripture. Ask God some of these why questions. In doing so, we will discover that even though we're asking why, the answer we discover will also reveal who. We will learn more about who God is. We will discover a deeper beauty in him. We will see patterns and order in his work, in Scripture, in life. We will have moments when we see things in a new way and so clearly that we can't imagine how we missed them before. We'll also have questions that remain unanswered. And we will marvel at the depth and wisdom of God in those moments too. God is calling us to know him more deeply and more personally. He wants to be a part of our life and reveal himself to us in new and incredible ways. He wants to change us to become more like him. He wants to show us himself. He wants us to know him truly. To know him to the best of our earthly abilities. The more we know of him, the more we will discover that we can never know him completely. He is infinite and his revelation is inexhaustible. But our desire to keep knowing him more and more deeply will consume us in a beautiful way that brings us great comfort and astounding peace. I encourage you, let's make the most of this remaining time of Lent to discover God more deeply in his Scriptures. As we do, we will fall ever more deeply in love with him, and we will recognize just how passionately he is in love with us.